Blog Talk Radio.
I'm 14 years old. Even though I may be a teenager, and some may not believe me, please listen to my experience. When I was young, I was not scared of ghosts, nor did I really believe in their presence, but slightly. One day, I went to a Japanese shrine with my parents in Japan. This shrine was close to my mother's house she grew up in. I was very attached to my mother. I was all just 7 or 8. I was a crazy little child. Soon it was time for me to leave. As a Japanese tradition, I threw in 10 yen. My mother gave me to throw in and make a wish. Because I was really attached to my mother, I could sometimes feel the sadness of how much she missed her parents. Since I didn't really know my real father, I cared a lot more about my mother than anyone in the world. I threw the coin in and made a wish. I wish I could once meet my grandmother. I had heard many stories of her from my mother, so that was why I was so anxious to meet her. But the only thing was that she had passed away, when my mother was around 21. After I made a wish, I saw a box with a whole bunch of paper in it. I ran over to my stepdad and anxiously asked what it was. He told me it gives you wisdom to your wish. So, as a whiny little child, I begged my stepfather to get me one. So gave me money, and I put it in the little slot. I slowly put my small hand in and grabbed a piece of paper. To my surprise, it really did give me wisdom to my wish. I remember exactly what it said. If you wait, nothing will appear. But when you least expect it, I shrugged it off and went on with my life. About 2 weeks later, I returned from my second country. I went to the washroom in the middle of the night. Normally, my wishes never come true, but I was in for a big surprise. There, I saw an old lady who looked exactly like my grandmother in the picture my mom had stood there. She was smiling at me. She had a long white dress, and she was all white. Well, obviously, since I was small, I ran at a speed that could make me the fastest person alive, or at least it felt like it. I didn't have to go to the washroom after that, but that's when it all started. After that, I've been having strange experiences. I've seen my future self twice, once in grade 4, and the other I forget. In grade 4, I innocently walked to the washroom. And that's when the weirdest thing happened. That's when I saw the 12 to 13-year-old version of myself. I would say that maybe it's a doppelganger, but I'm not sure. And I know this sounds a little far-fetched, but it did happen. I told my mother, but she said it was probably my imagination. Many years passed, and many odd experiences had gone by. I'd moved during those years to Japan and back. This time, I was in a different building. It was in sixth grade. It was about 11:30 p.m. I went to the bathroom and washed my hands. I'd grown up a bit. I'd opened the door to only see a younger me. It looked as if it was in grade 4. Again, a ghost. She was staring at me. And I was so freaked out. I stood there in shock, unable to move. The only thing was, I was able to stare my younger self in the eye. Finally, I had the guts to run off. I couldn't help but notice that the younger me was wearing normal clothing. Then it hit me. When I saw a young woman, my grandmother, the very old version of me, they were all wearing a white dress. That must have represented that they had died. Just last year, I saw my stepdad's grandmother, who is healthy and alive, staring at my picture of when I was young, exactly like she was when she visited from Japan. Exact posture and everything. I thought I was dreaming and pinched myself many times. And tried laying back to my regular posture and sitting back up to see if she was still there. She was gone. Next morning, I told my weird experiences to my mother at the exact time she was thinking of her. My mom told me this. Maybe you see some of my thoughts. Tell me some experiences you had from the past. I told her one of the experiences. Like how I saw a young woman and described how she looked. My mom stared at me with shock. That description fit exactly her best friend's friend, who offed herself. In fact, a couple of months ago, I saw a faceless figure standing over my bed watching me. Earlier that day, my mom was imagining that and thinking how to see that it would be unpleasantly scary. Last but not least, at camp, I had this scary feeling inside myself. I'd never been so scared for so much a small thing. I knew that was fake. I fell asleep that night, having a dream that was extremely mysterious. I was playing capture the flag with everyone at camp. I wanted to go to the other side, but I saw a very pretty girl my age. She had a ponytail, beautiful skin, hazel eyes, a fit body, and she was wearing red clothing. She was blocking my way, so I decided I should run past her. I tried, but she was after me, so I decided to run back to my side. I ran as fast as I could, and finally got to my side. She was on her side, but slowly came into my side. All of a sudden, everyone was gone. It was only me and her. She was starting to feel like an evil presence. I was scared she ran after me, and finally, I could not run anymore. I couldn't walk. I was too scared. Then, right when she got in front of me, she gave me an extremely evil smile. I didn't feel good. I couldn't move. Then, right before something was going to happen, she started fading. Then, only her hazel eyes were left, except those pair of eyes were brownish white. They were staring at me, just staring. I woke up in shock and was scared so much. I've never experienced such an evil dream. Then, I turned to see right beside me, the girl from my dream fading, and just watching me. Then her eyes disappeared. I can't make this stuff up. I woke up and told my cabin buddy, who I was really great friends with. I told her what happened, and she happened to live in the area. She told me about a girl who had gone missing a while ago. The description fit her. A few weeks after camp ended, my friend sent me the newspaper about her missing. I saw her picture. It was her. Was she telling me something? What caused me to see all these things? I believe it was the shrine I visited in Japan, and it started there. I'm extremely scared of ghosts now. I sometimes consider visiting the shrine again, wishing I wouldn't see a ghost again. I will try my best to try to make a long story short, which is something I've never been good at. I moved into a second floor flat in South Utica, New York, in January of 2000. My husband was living in Watertown with a friend finishing up college. I always had an uncomfortable feeling in that house. When I would come home from work, it would occasionally feel as if someone had been there. You know that feeling. I thought maybe the psycho downstairs neighbor, Maria, had a key. One night, I think in March, I woke up to what sounded like someone walking up in the attic. I thought maybe it was Maria, the psycho downstairs neighbor. But she had a bad knee and was morbidly obese, and I would have heard her climbing the stairs to the attic. I shrugged it off. My husband moved in for good in May. There were always those little things that we shrugged off. For instance, the cupboard doors would all be open in the pantry. We would just figure it was the other person, mentally get mad at them, not wanting to waste the time or energy to discuss how irritating this was. In the winter of 2001, we had come home from partying all night. Yes, we were pretty wasted when this happened, and that is why we just forgot or never talked about this after that night. I fell into bed and passed out immediately. My husband brushed his teeth, turning off the dining room light, and shut our door to the dining room. He climbed into bed and drifted to sleep for about 5 minutes. All of a sudden, we both opened our eyes, and the bedroom door was open, and the dining room light was dim. It was the kind of light that had a dimmer. You had to push it on to turn it on and off. And it was on high when it turned off. We looked at each other, kind of read each other's minds, and dismissed it. It had to be the partying. About a month later, I was sleeping on the couch with my head on my husband's lap. All of a sudden, he got up and ran for a knife in the kitchen. He said he saw a man walking in the back part of the kitchen. He was terrified. Don't ask me why he would run towards it. I would be out of the door, but that's just me. He was shaken up for quite a while. No partying this time. He swore he saw a man out of the corner of his eye. I told him he was nuts. About a week after that, in the middle of the afternoon in February, he was home listening to the TV playing loud in the living room while typing a paper in the computer room. He said that he heard a loud slam, walked out, and our bedroom door, which is hung up on a throw rug, was shut. All the windows were closed, as it is as cold as the North Pole in February in central New York. I was at work when he called me, and he was really worked up. I'd never seen him like that. That was when we really became suspicious. I called our landlord and told her not to think I was nuts, but did anyone ever die in that house? She told me that her husband's godfather did back in the early 1930s, and it was of throat cancer. She wanted to know why I was asking. I told her what had happened. She then said that she thought they had taken care of that problem. She told us that the last tenants moved out suddenly after seeing the apparition of a man in his 60s, sitting at the kitchen table and reading. She told me that they had a Catholic mass to help Frank move on. He must have really loved this house. The downstairs tenants after Cycle Maria moved out also had experiences, but I promised a short story. We moved to Syracuse almost 3 years ago. I didn't want to live in a house where someone had died. I actually made a point of it. My very good friend told me the first time she walked in this house and that she felt as though she wasn't alone. I told her that was impossible. A couple months after my son, Peyton, was born, in September 2003, I was sitting downstairs typing on the computer. I had the video monitor on. I heard the strange, muffled, non-English whispering. I turned to look at the monitor, and his mobile was gently moving. He was too little to reach it, and again, no windows open, no air on. I ran upstairs, and his mobile was still, and no noise. My husband was gone on business, and no one died in this home, so I assumed that I must have been seeing things. Then, there was a picture of my son, Peyton, which I sent a copy. This was taken around November or December of 2003. My 7-year-old stepson came out of his room a few months ago and told me there was a boy in his room. He was wearing jeans and an orange shirt. He told me that the boy looked at him, then walked to his bedroom door. Lastly, the top to the kitchen trash can has fallen off, and my stepson, in my presence twice. Lastly, the TV station has changed itself twice. And that's all I have to say for now. Thanks for reading. This story starts a long time ago when I was about 8 or 9. I was watching TV when I looked up, and I saw a man watching me. He had a blue coat on. He smiled at me and faded away. I didn't feel alarmed in any way. I even told my parents, and they believed me completely. Every time I was by myself or scared or sad, he was there, and he would sit by me and his presence would make me feel better. Then one day he just disappeared. When I was 12, he appeared again. I was home alone and cleaning the kitchen. We had one of those musical globe things that played music only if you turned the key that's under it. All of a sudden it went off, and we had not messed with it in years. I had put a bunch of napkins in the stove by the burners, heard a voice in my head say, "Stove." I looked at the stove, and it was on. I feel chills run up my spine when I think about what could have happened. I guess the blue man was still there all along, still watching over me. The year was 1947, and the place, Isle of Wight. It's off the south coast of England, a holiday resort. I'd been taken there for a week's holiday with my brother and my parents and aunt and uncle. There was nothing special about the hotel or its surroundings. I think it was the third day of our holiday, and we were all in the dining room at the hotel for our evening meal. I was sitting next to my brother with my back to the windows, and consequently was able to see the whole room. I would mention at this point that the walls were lined with large mirrors, fashionable at the time, and the effect was rather fascinating, as no matter which way one looked, one would see just about any other part of the room in reflection from one or another of the mirrors. As far as I know, this place is still the same now as it was then, except the owners have changed. In those days, especially when there are four adults with you, children were seen and not heard. So as far as I was concerned, any conversation around me was ignored. During our meal, several guests came and went, as one would expect to happen. At some point, I looked up, and a man entered the room and sat down for his meal. There was nothing special about him, and my alarm bells were ringing. I didn't and couldn't see why he looked so ordinary. Eventually, it really dawned on me what was wrong. I couldn't see him anywhere in the mirrors. Impossible in that situation. I tried to whisper to my brother about this, but was told to be quiet and eat. I watched this man until we left and checked as we went out that no one could see his image in the mirrors. At the time, all this left in my mind was a question mark. How? The next day, we were down at the beach, enjoying a rare, warm, sunny day. My brother had gone in for a swim, and I was lying on the sand watching him and others, simply enjoying the sunshine. I looked around and saw the man from the night before coming down the steps to the beach. He was some way away from us at this point, and started to walk along the beach near the water's edge, heading in our direction. I think I sat up as the scene I'd witnessed in the dining room came back to me, and I watched him as he walked. He had no shadow. I checked that everyone else's shadows, including mine, were as they should be, and could find nothing else amiss. I never spoke to him, nor have I any idea who he was. I never saw him again after that day. This is a story that my mother told me and my sisters. Back in the 40s, my dad accepted a job in Atlanta, Georgia, and my parents moved from Chicago, Illinois to Atlanta. For several weeks, they stayed at the Biltmore Hotel in Atlanta while looking for a home. One night, my mother, who was 8 months pregnant at the time, was alone in the room by herself because my dad was on a business trip. She said that she woke up at about 3:35 in the morning and saw a man standing beside the bed and looking at her. The man was well-dressed in a suit and smiling at her, She knew immediately it was a ghost, because although she could see him plainly, he was transparent. She could see through him. When she was growing up, the woman who had raised her told her if she ever saw a ghost, say the Lord's Prayer, and it would go away. She pulled the sheet over her head and said the Lord's Prayer. When she looked again, he was still there. She would close her eyes and open them again, but he did not go away. She fell asleep with the sheets pulled over her head, and the next day she found out at the front desk that a man had died in that room at that exact time she saw the ghost. She described the man she saw to the clerk to ask if she knew him. She felt like the ghost meant her no harm and was there to make himself known and protect her. Her and her sister lived in an old house in Champaign, Illinois, and they both told me that they encountered ghosts several times in that home, and one time, they both woke up and saw one standing in their room. So far, I've never seen a ghost, but I'm convinced that they do exist. I've worked as a registered nurse at Henry Meehl Hospital for many years. There are so many reportings there that I'm not sure I can list them all, but here are a few. The TCU, Transitional Care Unit, is probably the most haunted unit. It serves patients who are not acutely ill, but are also not quite well enough to return home. So consequently, a lot of our elderly patients have spent a great deal of time there, including one that never quite made it home and died on the unit. There have been reports of a walker moving by itself down the hall at night. One room in particular, don't know the numbers, I didn't work there regularly, has a reputation for the call light repeatedly going off at night when it is empty of patients. So much so that the engineering has refused to come fix the bell when the nurses plead to have it silenced. I only worked there one night and had a heavy fire door slowly swing open in front of me and another nurse, as if someone was going into the room. No windows or doors were open as they were bolted shut, and the door is extremely heavy. The other nurse, terrified, screamed at me, "Close the door! Close the door!" That same night, I had a female patient who had been in her room for a few months and said she felt like she was going batty and that she was so thankful for her TV. Shortly after, it went to static, and I couldn't turn it off with the remote, nor by pushing the power on and off button on the set itself, and finally had to get a chair to flat out pull out the cord from the outlet that was situated near the ceiling. One night, one of the nurses was working a very late shift at night, and she went to go grab a mop after she spilled her drink all over the lobby floor. She went down to the storage area, where she knew nobody was there at the time. As she opened the door to the storage closet, in the darkness, she swore she saw what looked to be the face of an elderly woman from the other side of the room, and two glowing eyes, barely lit. It was all just bright enough to be seen with a naked eye. She immediately turned on the light and ran all the way back. She refused to go down there the rest of her time working there, and even change careers. It was that devastating to her. On the medical surgical unit too, there are ghosts up and down the whole hallway. The end opposite the nurse's station is especially bad. Rooms 148, 146, and 142 are the worst. Oftentimes, patients who are dying are put in these rooms, and shortly before they do die, patients often report seeing a little blonde girl in their room at night. They either ask the nurses to get her out, or at the very least, ask who she is. I had an aide one night open up a utility locker at the same end and saw the girl. She was crouched behind a walker, scared, looking up at her. Sometimes machines won't work in those rooms. Even if you trade them in several times from the supply department with different ones, they suddenly will start working again. Myself and another nurse witnessed shadow people at the same time walk past the nurse's station window while the computers and lights dimmed simultaneously. He saw the same night, one shadow person standing in a doorway, just staring at him. He looked up and asked yes, thinking it was a nurse aide willing to ask him a question, only to realize it wasn't an aide. Aides have seen patients that weren't there earlier in the evening, suddenly lying in a bed, and thinking it was a new admission, brought the vital signs machine back in to take their vitals, only to have the patient gone and the bed still made. MedSurge 1 is next to MedSurge 2, and though it isn't as bad as 2, I've had a patient complain that she felt little kids poking at her and pulling her down all evening. MedSurge 1 was a pediatric unit for 1 year when the hospital was first built, but was shut down, as it wasn't financially sustainable. The elevators near the cafeteria that lead down to the morgue are just plain creepy at night. I've known people that have had them slam open and shut closed several times before finally shutting and going down to the morgue. I personally would have had them open for me almost 100% of the time if I was pushing a gurney and didn't have a free hand to hit the button, saying thanks. Stay on whatever's good side. Besides, it is kind of nice, except for the creepy part. These are only a few of the stories off the top of my head. I myself have only worked on a few of the units, so I'm sure there are many more. I made a dark joke one day to one of the old-time doctors that the hospital is built in an old Indian burial ground, as it has so much activity there. And he responded that indeed it is. Who knows if he is right, but all of Santa Clarita is that Indian tribe situated throughout the valley for thousands of years. In fact, we were one of the main trading hubs, if not the main trading hub, from tribes spanning down into Mexico, all the way up to Canada. I can't validate the Indian burial ground part, but the stories I related to you here, I either experienced myself, or spoke with the Asian person firsthand who had just experienced something themselves, except for TCU. But there again, I used firsthand accounts. I grew up in the great state of Utah. As many know, this state has a rich, glorified history of Native Americans who have lived on the North American soil for generations. I'm going to tell you about my experiences with a ghostly apparition, a series of unusual chants I heard while camping, at the famous Uinta National Forest, and even a ghost dog. The climate of Utah is more diverse than you would think. We have areas of lush vegetation, forests, and other greener parts of the state in the north, and in the south, we have dry, barren deserts. This first story is about what my grandfather witnessed when he was driving late at night on the road. This was in St. George, Utah. My grandfather was always a very straight-laced person. Never drank, never smoked, always got enough sleep, and had a good head on his shoulders. The reason why I'm mentioning this is to explain what he saw that night. He was driving late at night, where there were barely any cars on the road. In fact, it seemed like he was the only one driving on this road. It was pitch black, and the only visibility he had was from his headlights that shine across the road. He had been driving on the same road for about 15 minutes, a road that was completely isolated in the middle of nowhere. Out of nowhere, he saw what looked to be a Native American man standing in the middle of the road from the distance. He slowed down immediately after he saw this, fearing he would hit the man. As he got closer, the Native American man disappeared. Now, he knew it wasn't his imagination. The man looked real to him, at least from afar. His mind wasn't playing tricks on him, and he swore to this day he wasn't tired. He knew what he saw. My grandfather was so floored by the whole event, he had to pause for a second and pull off to the side of the road. Where he stopped was where he saw the man. There was absolutely nothing and no one there. No homes in the area, just desert and a long winding road at night. There was no way he could explain it. This was also in the 1960s. And St. George was way smaller than it is now, a population around 5,000. My grandpa's still alive, in his 90s, and he hasn't given up on the authenticity of his story. He swears he saw a real ghost, and I'm convinced he will take his story to his grave. As for my experience, my family went camping in the Uinta National Forest, where we set up a tent deep in the woods. I remember it was a fantastic time. Just me, my dad, and my brother. We heard nothing but the sounds of nature, and we're truly enjoying our time alone from civilization. It was getting later in the night, and so we set up a campfire. It might have been around 11 p.m. at night, when my brother, my dad, and I all heard what sounded like a ghostly chant, almost sounding like a group of Native Americans. It sounded almost as if the chants were as low as gorillas chanting to us, which was unusual, because gorillas definitely don't live in Utah, and I couldn't think of an animal that could make such a deep voice. And not only that, but multiple voices chanting at once. What made it so eerie was that it wasn't frantic. The chants had a peacefulness to it. But of course, we were all freaked out. It was definitely not a comforting chant, but it wasn't boisterous. So anyway, my dad told me and my brother to get into the tent to sleep at night, because my dad was genuinely concerned that maybe there were dangerous people out there trying to scare us. The chants only lasted for about a minute, and it eventually went dead silent. And we never heard it again. I think my dad must have waited outside the tent with the campfire for an hour or two, just to make sure everything was okay. He eventually went back into the tent himself. However, that night of bizarre events were far from being over. As we were sleeping, my dad said that he was awakened by the sound of rustling leaves. He woke up and noticed from the inside of his tent a shadow on the other side, as in when you are in a tent and you see someone or something shadow move by. He immediately jumped out of the tent to investigate, but there was nobody there. He thought nothing of it, and then went back to bed. On the third night after camping, we went to bed as usual, and this time I experienced the same occurrence. Instead of it being a shadow of what my dad thought was a person, it seemed to be of a creature. My guess was a dog, because the shadow shape looked to be of that. It could have been a bear, because the shadow was small from seeing it move from inside of the tent. I immediately woke my dad up, and he went out. And again, nothing. Not sure what to make of all these events. But I'm certain there's more than meets the eye. I had a strange thing happen to me once when I was in the Philippines visiting family. The home I stayed in was part of a group of three homes around a central courtyard and a shared restroom and shower facility with the other two houses. My family showed me around the place the day I arrived, and then told me to be careful when going outside at night, because there was a ghost that haunted the area. My reaction, of course, was yeah, right, because because I just knew they were messing with me. My third night there, I wasn't feeling well and needed to go to the restroom a lot more than usual. Don't drink the water in the Philippines, by the way. So I end up going out to the restroom facility late at night. The restroom facility was on the far side of the courtyard from the house I was staying in, and around the side of one of the other houses. And it was very dark, because the lights were out in all of the houses, and the nearest street light was pretty far away. I was on my way back from the restroom, and just as I walked into the courtyard, what felt like a force grabbed me from behind. It was such an odd feeling, like a major resistance pushing me back, almost like going against gravity. To clarify, I don't mean literally. It was just an overwhelming pressure, but I could feel the energy around me so strongly, it's hard to explain exactly. I ended up turning around and going in the opposite direction to an empty field that bordered the courtyard, because something was almost pulling me in that direction, like there were hands on my body. I say something because it felt like a force grabbing me on my arms. This force seemed to disappear when I got closer to the field. I shifted my body around, and all of a sudden, I saw this solid black human shape from a few feet away, not moving, just a black mass silhouette that I could identify as a human, if that makes sense. I took off running towards the home and looking over my shoulder again, and the black shadow was gone. I burst into the home and apparently I screamed. I don't remember even doing it, but I'm not surprised and I'm not ashamed because people were coming out of their bedrooms to see what was going on. I told everyone what happened and they all took it in stride. One cousin even said, "Oh yeah, that happens." I was really freaked out and didn't sleep the rest of that night, and I didn't go out at night alone the rest of the time I was there. I did some reading and asked some questions since then, and the answer I got most often was that I was an evil spirit. From what I've read and been told, these are paranormal entities that are angry, evil, and seek to harm people. Sometimes they used to be human, but others were never human. When I ask what they were if they weren't human, I hear the word demon tossed around quite often. Regardless, there are many stories similar to mine where a black shadow or human shape has grabbed a person, and I just wanted to tell you about my experience. Maybe someone else has had this kind of experience as well. I grew up in a hip stone roof farmhouse that used to belong to my grandparents. We lived in a German-American neighborhood, and many farmhouses had a quaint old country sensibility, with the main living space a flight of stairs up from the entrance. Like many older homes, ours was large in size, but broken up into small rooms. One such room was my grandmother's old pantry, just off the kitchen. My parents had turned half of it into a small home office with a desk for the telephone back in the day of one telephone per household next to a window that looked out into our backyard. When I was very small, I used to enjoy looking out of our windows at night, making wishes on stars, watching sparkling waves of snow fall through the glow of our yard light, waiting for my dad to come in from his evening milking chores in the barn, occasionally finding surprises, like the summer evening that a huge green Luna moth came to rest on the window of the door. This small, close telephone room frightened me, but I enjoyed the backyard evening view, so I'd bravely venture into the room, crawl up into the chair next to the window, and look outside. One evening, I had a desire to look out the telephone room window. As usual, I was somewhat apprehensive about entering the little room. My curiosity overcame my anxiety. I took a deep breath and prepared to step over the threshold in the warm light of the kitchen into the darkness. As I did, I looked into the window, and there I saw, staring right back at me, the wizened face of an old man, hovering in midair. He was partially bald and had a long handlebar mustache, and he had a furious, even hateful expression. I remember screaming in terror and running outside into the arms of my perplexed mother, crying that a scary old man was floating outside. I remember my mother wondering if I'd seen a frightening program on television and had let my imagination run away with me. I was understandably afraid to venture into that room for a while. The fear and the memory of that night faded away. To the extent that I remembered my experience at all, I attempted to explain it in terms of a vivid imagination, and I never had another experience like that in that room. Many years later, when I was a teen, I was sitting at the dinner table with my parents as they were reminiscing about their childhood, their earliest memories. My father said that one of his earliest memories was of his father's original home, a small wooden home that once stood a short distance away from our farmhouse. He said that he remembered his grandfather dying and being laid out in the parlor of that little home, as was a common occurrence in that rural neighborhood, even in the 20s. "What do you remember about your grandfather?" my mother asked. "He was an old man, mean and strict. We kids were afraid of him. He didn't have a lot of hair, but he did have one of those old-fashioned handlebar mustaches," Dad replied. I felt the hair rise in the back of my neck as I suddenly remembered that vision of my early childhood. My name is Lena, and I'm from Malta. I was looking at your site because I have a ghost story I wanted to share with you. About 8 years ago, I was living with my ex-boyfriend, who had recently changed the house at the time. The home was about 50 years old, and as we were fast asleep, maybe it was between 2:30 and 3 in the morning, I began to slightly wake up, because although I was not fully awake in my head, I was hearing some noises like I had a metal bucket in my yard, which was near the bedroom, like someone was dragging it. Then the wardrobe doors began like someone was shutting and opening them. The wardrobe was by the wall on the side where I was sleeping. I want to remind you that by then, I was still not fully awake. And then I could hear near my ear like people talking. Remember, I was half awake until all of a sudden, I was fully awake. And at the end of the bed, I saw two figures of two men. And although it was dark in the room, I saw them clearly. When I saw this, I was in awe. And I rose on my ankle. And these two figures, as I already told you, were of two men. One was young, and the other was older. And they were wearing white robes, and on their heads they had these white turbans, and they had no feet. They half turned and looked at me, and then they went forward like in a slow motion, and began to fade, until they vanished through the wall. I was not frightened at all. I swear that I was fully awake when I saw them, and in the morning, I told my ex-boyfriend who did not see nothing, because only me they had woken up, and he didn't believe me, but I know for sure that it happened. To this day, I don't know who they were. Excuse me for my poor English. Throughout the years, I've had many experiences with things I've never been able to explain. I'll share some of them here. This is the first one I have a memory of. When I was very small, about 5 years old, we lived with my grandmother while our house was being built. I always felt warm and protected in that home. I never was afraid. Even though my room was at the top of very narrow stairs and was under the eaves of the attic, I never feared anything in that room. One night, there was a terrible thunderstorm, and I remember dreaming that there was a fire under my parents' bed. I woke up screaming and ran into their room. I kept telling my father that there was a fire under the bed. They did their best to explain that it was only a nightmare and that there was no fire. My father even got out of bed, pulled up the covers, looked under the bed, and promised that there was no fire. I eventually fell back to sleep in the bed with them. An hour or so later, I had the dream again, but the fire was bigger. I started screaming again and woke my parents this time. However, there was the distinct smell of burning wiring, and indeed, the floorboards under the bed had started to smolder. Luckily for all of us, my father was able to shut off the electricity and stop the fire before it truly started. The only damage was replacing some wiring and a few floorboards. From that point on, though, my parents always listened to me when I had an unusual dream or saw something out of the ordinary. This, though, was the scariest thing my parents witnessed when I just turned 5 years old. We always had the attic stairs open. Apparently, I'd sneaked into our attic for multiple days. And when my parents would catch me playing in the attic, they would ask me why I kept going up there. I would tell them that the old man in the attic was lonely, and he wanted a friend. So I continued to talk to him to keep him company. This clearly startled my parents. And after the fire incident and the dreams that I had, they wanted to get to the bottom of this. They continuously asked me, "Where is this man?" So I would point at the corner in the attic and say, "He's staring at you. He's very mad you ignored him." It was at this point we had a priest come bless the home because it really seemed like a massive negative energy was in the home. I even remember getting a witch psychic to come and investigate, to talk to whoever the man was, and get an idea. So we did get a spirit session, and she talked with the spirit. The psychic said she felt a man named Jim was burned to death in this home. With what I said about having dreams of the home burning, it was a man in his early 60s. So we got a spirit box, and the psychic asked if Jim was there. He confirmed and said fire truck 4 or 5 times, then smoke, and I was smoked. The psychic then asked the spirit if it died a bad death, and the spirit box said, "Are you kidding?" She asked again. He said, "Yes. You can't make this stuff up. If you ever played with a spirit box before, you know that spirits communicate with their energy to create statements through radio frequencies and whatnot. What we were able to discern was that there was probably a fire in this home, and that this old man was caught in it. We don't know much aside from that, but this whole experience was spooky. This was back in 2009. I've been reading all these great ghost stories, and now I feel it's safe to share mine. Being a paramedic literally saved my life. Before becoming one at age 34, I was always a troublemaker, getting into physical fights as a kid and early adult, rebelling against parents, doing lots of hard drugs, and ultimately doing a stint as a drug dealer. I was a real pain in the rear. I'm 44 now, and have completely turned my life around. Eventually, I got arrested for possession and spent 6 years in prison at the age of 24. Prison life was a lot worse than I could have ever imagined. It's not like they say it is in the movies. Ironically enough, though, I had a prison mate who ended up becoming one of my best friends, Sam. Sam was about 8 years older than me and did time for attempted murder. He once walked in on his sister getting abused by her boyfriend, grabbed a bat, and beat the man in the face until he became severely deformed. He ended up surviving with permanent injuries sustained. Sam was a good guy, but he had a bit of a temper issue, and it only really came out when he felt like he or his loved ones were in true danger. So, Emma's always a bit of a protector, even to a fault. Sam and I would always have these profound conversations, as my cell was next to his. The last conversation we ever had, he told me that the stuff that I was doing was too petty, and he didn't want to see me throw my life away. I remember him distinctly asking me who I wanted to be, and I always just said I don't know. He suggested a paramedic because he saw me as a healer, figuratively and literally. He made me promise him that when I got out, I would straighten my life out. When I asked him what he was going to do when he got out, he just laughed at me and said, "Kid, it's my time to go." At first, I didn't really think much about his statement. I thought he meant he was getting out of prison soon, but he got 10 years and was serving his 5. That's when I realized what he really meant. He was going to permanently exit this world. So I go to bed that night, and before I end up drifting off, I say to Sam, "Good night." The next thing he said is something I'll never forget for as long as I live. Sam said to me, "See you later." The next morning I called for Sam, but he wasn't responding. A prison guard came by and noticed that he wasn't breathing. Before I knew it, my best friend, Sam, was gone. Little did I know, though, that Sam would reappear in my dreams and as an apparition in jail. Yes, my jail cell. So, in my dream, I'm a free man. I'm in this empty, narrow white hallway, sort of hard to describe, but the entire hallway looked like it had clouds surrounding it. At the end of the hallway, I see Sam. He looks in great shape, about 10 years younger, and is wearing a white suit to match the hallway. He's just smiling. As I continue to walk down the long hallway, I approach Sam, though, and that's when he slowly starts to disappear. I suddenly fall down to my knees and yell, "Why did you do this, Sam? Why? Your sister needs you." Suddenly, I wake up, and I'm in my jail cell. This is late at night. Felt like it was 12:30. That was when I saw a black shadow as I was adjusting my eyes. At first, I couldn't believe it, but it was the shadow and silhouette of a man. Somehow, I instantly knew that this man was Sam. I then watched as the shadow slowly moved away and disappeared down the hallway of the jail. Nobody was around at the time, and it definitely wasn't a prison guard, for the obvious reason being, prison guards don't look like dark shadows and silhouettes. So, fast forward a few years later, and unfortunately, I relapsed into a bad drug habit after getting out of prison, getting addicted to the powder. This was the last and final straw that led me to focus on my life and pursue my paramedic career. I end up taking a hit and almost dying entirely. I remember taking one last hit of the powder, passing out, and not waking up for hours. At this time, I was rushed to the hospital because I was on the verge of losing my life. Apparently, I flatlined and became medically dead at the same time, but I came back to life. In that moment, it seemed as if it was an out-of-body experience. I could see myself in the hospital bed, and suddenly, I was in this light room, just like the dream I had in prison. There was Sam again. Sam looked at me, grinned, but didn't say a word to me. My old dog Spot was right next to him, who had previously died when I was a kid. My favorite dog in the world, Spot, was a black lab. There was an overwhelming peace that came over me, and everything felt so good in the moment. It was a feeling that I didn't want to escape. Suddenly, I regain consciousness, and I'm back in the hospital bed in tremendous pain. That's when the doctor told me I had basically died, and I was shocked. So, fast forward a couple more years, I finally became a paramedic. I turned my life completely around, and I truly believe that Sam was responsible. I believe that I did see Sam in the afterlife through spirit communication in my dreams, and also the black outline I saw in the present. I remember what he said about trying to be a medic, and it just sort of resonated with me. I did want to help people in the end, and it was the best decision I ever made. These days I wonder how Sam would have been if he was still with us, but I'm sure he would have been proud of me now. When I almost died, it was the ultimate wake-up call. In some deranged way, I think Sam was responsible for it. Thanks for reading my story. I know it's a bit unbelievable, but I promise you, this all happened. I know I don't need to prove to anyone that this really happened to me, but I truly believe that Sam is my guardian angel watching over me. I believe that he gave me a second chance at life, maybe because he believed in my potential. Thank you, Sam. I'll never forget you. I have one last story for now to tell you. I was born in 1955, so I went to high school starting in 1970. Needless to say, the fashion and hairstyles I liked were very different from those which my mother was used to. We frequently had clashes over these things. Also, from the get-go of my life, I'd always been interested in things like camping, fishing, hiking, and nature in general. My mother, to say the least, was disappointed. She had always envisioned having a daughter who was interested in clothes, makeup, and flirting with boys. I just wasn't the daughter she had envisioned. I ended up working in forensics for years, and I do believe she was proud of me during the last 20 years of her life. The year and a half after my father had intentionally left this earth, and she died, were filled with sadness for us both. Looking back, if I had known then what I know now, I would have done things differently. But that is Monday morning quarterbacking. I did the best I could to take care of us both during that time, but I feel like I could have done better, and I regretted it after she had passed on. First, I distinctly remember seeing my dad's ghost sitting in his favorite chair of the old house that we lived in, and the one that I own today. One day, I was in the kitchen and looked over to the chair. That was when I saw a gray cloud literally sitting in the chair for a few seconds, then slowly disappear. I tried to blink my eyes to see if I was just imagining things, but then something crazy happened right after. The picture of my dad that I had hanging on the wall somehow fell to the ground without explanation. I was shocked. And that's when I instantly put two and two together. I took it as a comforting sign that my dad was making sure I was okay, even if at the time, it still terrified me. Things weren't always so pleasant with the hauntings, though. I would constantly hear the sounds of boots thumping upstairs in the middle of the night, always at the same time, for weeks on and off. I wanted to believe it was my dad then, too. But he never wore boots, and I don't think he would intentionally scare me off if he knew I was frightened. I remember hearing whispering in my dad's former room, and it sounded demonic, low, like multiple people talking to each other. I was always alone and by myself when these things would happen, so I know it wasn't just me hearing things. In that very same room, in the middle of my sleep, I once heard heavy breathing coming from the closet. I jumped out of my bed, opened the closet door to make sure nothing was there. I was right. Nothing at all. When I had my son at age 25, years after my dad died, he was 4 years old at the time, said he made friends with the old man in a fedora hat. This really shocked me, because my dad loved fedoras. He would wear them constantly during life, and even collected them as a hobby. My dad also smoked cigars a lot, and sometimes a fog, a light fog, would mysteriously appear in his room without the windows open. At times I would get paranoid and think that the house was smoking. Honestly though, I'm not sure if this was paranormal fog, but everything else was 100% paranormal to me. Now on to my mother. Unfortunately, I never had any obvious hauntings from my mother that were as obvious as my dad's. Sometimes I could swear I saw her face looking into the window of the front door, but because it wasn't clear, I wasn't sure if that was just my mind. One night, not too many months after she had died, I dreamt of her, framing this photo in my dream. We're right in red lacy strands, as in a Valentine's Day card. As I viewed this picture in my dream, I heard her tell me I love you. Her voice radiated nothing but 100% love. It was as if she was saying to me, I know we had our differences when I was with you, but I can see things so much more clearly from where I am now, and so I want to tell you now I love you. This was a very intense dream, and I do believe it was a message from my mother. The memory of this dream has been a great comfort to me. I've been a fan of this site for years, so here's one of my stories. When I was young, my dad's mother and her second husband, not my grandmother, lived in a 1920s vintage flat-top Suco house in West Orlando. My brother and I both spent nights over there. The room in which we would sleep had a bed that was, from a four-year-old's perspective, about a mid-chest high. I remember when I was about 4 years old walking into that room one day and seeing this white-haired lady in the bed. I remember she had dark eyes and a prominent curved nose with large nostrils. I remember that she and I looked at one another. She seemed to want something from me, but I didn't know what that could be. She was not either malevolent nor cuddly like my grandmother. She seemed to be a businesslike person who didn't hesitate to ask the nearest person around to help. In other words, a matter-of-fact person. I believe at that point, I turned and left the room. To the best of my knowledge, my grandmother never had anyone like this stay in her home. As I got older, I remember my mother talking about my step-grandmother's mother, who had lived with them for some time. During one of these conversations, I said that I remembered her, thinking of the older lady that I'd seen in that bed. My mother said there was no way I could remember her, since she died before I was born. I never brought this up with mother again, and since then, my mother has passed. I still can't help but wonder who that lady was. I've been to Church Road with a group of my friends. It's located at Church Street in Burt Road in Michigan. It is haunted. Where the house used to be has been torn down. The temperature would change about 10 to 20 degrees. We tried to test the ghost, so we put my friend's Jeep in neutral, and was pushed uphill by something. The red eyes are true. If you walk outside your car, he will follow behind you. We also had handprints down the side of our vehicle. We went out there every night for a week and experienced something every night. I've lived in Hillsdale County all my life, and my friend lives right down the road from the cemetery on Burt Road. The truth, it's haunted. I've never seen the sign change, but I will agree that the people who are buried there are not at rest. There are a lot of people who died there of murder, offing themselves, and accidents. I've seen people walk through there at night, and you just get an angry, uneasy feeling about the whole place. You also have to remember that right behind the cemetery is a gravel pit where a woman drowned while swimming out there with her friends. I love the ghost hunt, and I've seen spirits since I was little. I also know that the one on Church Road is not a nice man. I've watched him make one of the people that were in my car very sick, and she didn't get better until we got off the road. The legend is that you have to enter from Holcomb Road, and you have to exit from Holcomb Road. If you don't, he will follow you home. We tried that one night, and he didn't follow us home, but something did, because we woke up to a little girl singing one day, like legit singing, and then we went back. I can't make this stuff up, and I promise you, this is 100% factual. There is a ghostly presence that many have reported as a man who just lingers in that area. I haven't been out there in years, but I'm planning to go back there in a few weeks to see if things have changed since they started building a home on the old foundation where the house used to be. I grew up in a city in southern Ontario, and I've had several encounters of paranormal activity. When I was 8 years old, my mother and my brother had moved into a single-family home that was attached in the front to a store for clothing alterations and such. The home was built in the 1930s, and I was unaware as what the history of the home was. However, there was always the strong feeling on the back of my neck that I was being watched in a way that made me feel horrid and vulnerable. There were certain parts of the home that had felt more evil than the whole house felt. The first part was the stairs going to the basement, and the upstairs bathroom made my stomach turn. I always felt eyes of anger on my neck. My little brother, who was 6 years old at the time, and I were rollerblading in the basement that was not developed enough to be a problem with the rollerblades. There was a separate room in the corner that had a glass pane door, and we had never gone into that room, as it was just really creepy. We both very suddenly stopped blading, and both looked to the glass paned window, and we both had seen a clear apparition of an older man who had the evil look in his eyes, just like we always felt, looking at the back of our necks. We ran upstairs with the blades on to tell our mom. She refused to go look, as she'd been admitted to having the same fear in the home. We did move out within 6 months, as it seemed to be getting worse with things going missing, and my Barbie dolls going missing for weeks, and then re-showing itself mutilated. It just felt horrid to be there for all of us. As an adult, I'd share that story with a woman that I'd met, and she knew exactly which house I'd spoken of. I showed her the exact home, and she said that the home had been a funeral parlor. The home was evil, and I could never go into it again.
This story happened a few years ago when I worked in the electronics department at a small town Walmart. The store has a photo center with self-service kiosks in the electronics department, so I was usually the one manning it. This town had a large retirement community, and a lot of bored seniors would come in to use a kiosk for hours at a time, printing pictures. This was a pretty good gig. I was good at helping the customers figure out this newfangled tech, and they loved showing me all their pictures. They were mostly adorable and helped my shift go by. Then he showed up. An old man, looked to be in his 70s or 80s, with a thick European accent. He looked very sweet and unassuming. He asked for help at the kiosk, and I obliged. Delighted, he asked me to look at some pictures he took of his wife. Trigger warning, it gets graphic. I will never forget what I saw. As I plunged into his hard drive, he was talking about how he just moved here after his wife passed. Terrible accident. She had apparently fallen and never recovered. Then the photos loaded. A woman on a sidewalk. There was blood. Her arm stuck out at an odd angle. She looked broken. The man, still smiling by the way, explained how he had taken this right after her fall. He clicked the arrow keys. There were many shots from different angles. The horror show kept going. I was completely speechless. What do I even say to that? There is another series of the same woman in a hospital bed, hooked up to all kinds of tubes, clearly dying. It was sickening, but the worst ones were the ones where she was dead. I mean dead, eyes open and rolling back, mouth gaping dead. Then the old man standing next to her corpse, smiling, the same creepy smile he wore as he completed the gruesome tale. I don't know what happened to him after that. I muttered some excuse and ran to the bathroom. I threw up and then went home. Every time I saw him in the store, I power walked the other way. I did speak to my manager about it, but I feel like they never took it seriously. They said that he was just a harmless man with a photography bug. I still see that dead woman when I close my eyes sometimes. So this just happened last night, and I'm really freaking out about it. For some context, I'm a 25-year-old female living in a less than desirable part of my town. There has been a huge problem with the overabundance of homeless people in my area. The homeless part isn't the main concern. It's that most are on drugs, which has led to a major increase in break-ins, and going out in the dark, even just to the car, is a tad bit hair-raising. Anyways, I live on the third floor of a three-story apartment. The layout of my apartment is pretty basic. Kitchen and bathroom to the left and right as you enter. If you continue down the straight hallway from the entry, you'll hit the living room and the dining room that has a huge bay window with a bedroom to the right. So last night, I just got done with the dishes and was preoccupied in the kitchen. I kept hearing what I can only describe as a scratching tapping sound. It was pretty faint, and at the time, I paid very little attention to it. A little after I started hearing the sounds, I went into my bedroom, and through the window, I could have sworn I saw movement, but when I took a closer look, nothing was there. Now, I live on the third floor, but below my window is the top of the extended portion of the shared laundry room. It was a good 10 to 12 feet below the bottom of my window. At this point, I thought I was just tripping after a long day. I changed and got something comfy on and headed into the living room to watch a few episodes of Lucifer and text a few friends. The whole time when I was on the couch, I would hear the same faint sounds, but every time I would pause the TV, I would no longer hear it. At this point, I don't know if I'm nuts or I should actually be wary of this. I kind of brushed it off, but listened closely. I unpaused the TV, but was not focused on the devil himself. I was just listening and looking out the corner of my eye. That's when I saw it. A hand at the corner of my bay window. It's important to note that there's an 8-inch ledge just below my window. I believe the purpose of the ledge is for drainage. Well, anyway, there was someone on that ledge just below my window. I tried to act as if I hadn't seen anything, and then sent a text to the guy that lived two apartments over, just hoping that he was home. I casually walked into the kitchen and decided to call him. Luckily, he picked up right away.
Hey, what's up?
There's a person outside my window, and I think they're going to bust in. He then said something that made my heart drop. He wasn't home. At that point, I didn't know what to do. I was still in the kitchen, but was acting like I was cleaning up and turned off the kitchen light. I just stood there in complete darkness. I was doing my best to play it off as if I was clueless, and I think I was doing a good job. I was acting as if I was texting, but I had my eye trained on the window. That's when it all came together. I saw the hand move out of the corner of the window with what looked like a phone, and then I heard the sound. It was a slight tap of the phone against the window. He was recording me through my window. I don't know why I did what I did next, or if I was even thinking, but I ran straight towards the window and pounded on it. The hand moved quickly, and then I covered my windows with my blinds. It's kind of an anticlimactic ending. I ended up calling the cops, but I doubt anything will come of it. Earlier today, my neighbor gave me sticks to put in my windows, and I think I'm going to have my blinds closed at night from now on. I don't know how long this person was out there, and I honestly don't want to know. I just feel so unsafe sitting in my apartment tonight. My friend lived in a super rural, small country town, and I had came to spend the summer at her grandparents' house. We were both 13 at the time. We are now 22, and thought it would be a good idea to sneak out around the town, maybe stop by the park. As we were walking down this road, about 30 minutes after we left the house, we noticed someone was following us, wearing all black with a hoodie. We both got pretty creeped out and quickly ran to the corner before hiding in some dark bushes. After the guy passed us, we waited for another 30 minutes. We decided that we should probably head back to the house, so we ran there. Once we got back inside, we really couldn't get to sleep, so we did an all-nighter. The next morning, we saw on the news that a woman was stabbed, assaulted, and killed on the same exact road that we had been on that night. We can't help but wonder if that attacker was the man who had been following us. Safe to say, we didn't sneak out again after that. Extra details. We believe the man was following us because of multiple factors. 1. It was 3 a.m. and he was the only other person we saw in the area. Super rare to see anyone else that late in a small town. 2. He was wearing full black, joggers and a hoodie with the hood up. It was pretty warm out, since it was summer, so it just seemed odd. 3. Every time we would stop and look back at him, he would act like he was looking at something, and then when we'd start walking again, he would do the same. It just seemed suspicious, and we both got a bad feeling, so we hid. Also, we did not tell the police because we were scared. We also didn't have much information to give them, other than the fact that it was a male, and he was wearing all black. We didn't think that would be any help. If I was an adult at the time, I for sure would have reported something, but I was just a child. So this story is from around 10 years ago. I was 16 or 17 at the time. I recently discovered this subreddit, and it instantly brought these memories flooding back to me. At the time, I kind of just brushed it off, because nothing bad ended up happening, and I put it down as, I guess this shit just happens to you when you're a woman walking alone at night, but looking back now, I realize how creepy it was. I was coming home on a Thursday night after being at a pub with some friends. We had been out a little more centrally in the city, so I had to take the bus on my own to get home to my residential neighborhood. I had done this route hundreds of times, so I didn't see it as being particularly dangerous, especially since I live in a fairly nice neighborhood. It was only about 11 p.m., but because I lived in a residential area, and it was in the middle of the working week, when I got off the bus at my stop, it was absolutely dead, and there was no one around. Again, this didn't spook me, as it's only about a 5 to 10 minute walk from the bus stop to my house. As I turned down a long residential street that leads towards my house, I noticed a guy walking further down the street. This puts me a little on edge, but I was reassured by the fact that he had his back towards me and was walking away from me down the street. As I kept walking down the street, I noticed the guy turn around and clock me. That's fine, I thought. I always turn around when I hear someone walking behind me at night, so So nothing weird about that. But I noticed as we get further and further down the street, kept checking if I was still walking in the same direction as him. At this point, I'm starting to get pretty freaked out, as I'm painfully aware that we are the only two people around. Just as I was weighing up what I should do, he turned on the path of one of the houses to the right, and I let out a sigh of relief. He was going into his house. I was just being paranoid the whole time. The houses in my area are terraced, with the front doors kind of being embedded into the enclave at the front of the house. What this means is that from where I was standing, about 50 feet away, I couldn't actually see the front door of the house as it was obscured by the wall. However, I saw him walk down the path and disappear into the front enclave, so my logical conclusion was that he was letting himself into the house. I can't describe exactly what made me feel like this, but after that initial feeling of relief wore off, I suddenly got this really bad feeling, so I stopped walking and just stood there. There's a teeny voice in my head that said, "What if he was just faking you out?" The feeling became so strong that I stepped off the pavement and ducked behind a parked car and just waited. After a couple of minutes of just crouching behind the car, staring at the house, I saw movement and my heart stopped. The man came back down the path, out into the street, and was looking around, looking for me. He must have been waiting for me in the doorway, knowing that if I kept walking, I wouldn't see him until it was too late. Unfortunately for him, his hiding place also meant that he couldn't see me. So when I didn't walk past as he anticipated, he came back out into the street to try to work out where I was. Looking back now, I probably should have called the police at this point, but as a scared teenager, my fight or flight brain took over, and I sprinted down one of the roads, running perpendicular to the street where we were on, as I knew I could use it and take a slightly longer route home. I didn't stop running until I got home, where I quickly double-locked the door behind me. Amazingly, I didn't even think to wake up my family. I literally just went to bed, and then woke up the next morning and went to school. I dread to think of what would have happened if I hadn't got that bad feeling and stopped walking. Part of me thinks that on some sort of subconscious level, my brain had registered of not hearing the front door shut after the man had approached it, and therefore triggered an alarm in my head, but I had no perception of it at the time. Lesson learned, trust your gut.
I was in a toxic, borderline abusive friendship with a girl from the ages of 9 to 12. Here's a little background information to give you a little understanding as to what my life was like back in the late 2000s, early 2010s. I grew up in a very tumultuous household. My parents hated each other, and my extended family, along with my immediate, were plagued by mental illness and drug addiction. Needless to say, I was a very anxious girl who was drawn to unstable people, and suffices it to say, they were drawn to me. I was a shy 11-year-old girl who, like many others before me, used the internet as a way to vent my frustrations and anger about my home life. This was the time where AOL was the main source of communication used between friends, and I was no stranger to this, along with MySpace and Facebook. However, I wasn't like the typical preteens of this era, or so I thought. I kept my profiles private, never accepted a follow or a friend request that I didn't know, and never shared my location on these said profiles. This is the part where I introduce Tanya. Tanya isn't her name, of course, as I don't want to use her real name in case she just so happens to read this thread, watches the YouTube channel, or listens to the podcast. So, we'll just call her Tanya. Tanya and I met in elementary school, one of the points in my life where my family situation was quite volatile, and in retrospect, I think she sensed this. I was vulnerable, and Tanya took advantage of my innocence. She never really displayed any signs of her true intentions in the beginning, as they never usually do. She would do shady things every now and again, manipulate me into begging my mom to stay on the computer until the wee hours of the morning so we could go on not-safe-for-work websites, ghost me when I didn't give her my favorite pen, or yell at me when I couldn't perfect a guitar solo on Guitar Hero. She did some things to me that I believe my brain blocked out due to trauma. My mom didn't like her either. Parents always have weird intuition when it comes to friends, and I wish to God I would have listened to my mom before Tanya did what she did to me. Tanya's behavior changed for the worse when we turned 11. Tanya was openly jealous of my success in school. Granted, she was incredibly smart herself, but she always made it a point to mock me for having great grades and would always comment that since I wasn't pretty enough, having good grades would be a nice balance. Nice, right? It took me a while to build my self-esteem up after all the snide remarks she would make about my weight and my face, and only now as a 22-year-old do I think that I'm beautiful and have a wonderful figure. Anyways, back to Tanya. As a result of her jealousy and growing resentment towards me, she began to plot my downfall. I make no exaggerations either. This girl literally tried to ruin my self-worth even more than she already had. It started in sixth grade. Tanya and I were remarkably close that year, and I wanted to do everything with her. We would talk all day in school and would chat all night on AIM. One particular evening, Tanya and I were talking about boys. Being that we were hormonal preteens, our conversations would usually turn into who we liked in school that day. Being that I had a horrible relationship with my father, I didn't really trust boys, even from an early age, so it was rare if I developed a crush on one. I remember Tanya and I's conversation going a little something like this. Her saying, "Do you know Mark?" And me replying, "The kid in my class, yeah, why?" "I heard he likes you." "What? No way." "Totally, he told me. You want me to talk to him and give him your username?" "Of course. Oh my God, thank you, Tanya." My heart was racing. A boy liked me? Impossible. When Tanya told me that she would give Mark my username for AIM, I nearly exploded in my seat. 11-year-old me couldn't believe I was going to have my first real boyfriend. But how wrong I was. Fast forward to the next night, I was getting ready for bed when I heard the famous AOL ding sound off on my iPod Touch. You know the sound I'm talking about. When I checked the notification, it was a message from MarkyBoy99. I turned red. Tanya really had talked to Mark and gave him my username. She was truly the best. He messaged me with the usual, "Hey," emphasis on the three Y's, and I responded, "Hey." I didn't want to come off as desperate, so I only used one Y. Not even 1 minute later, he messaged me back. We talked all night about everything, our days, how school was, what type of silly bands we liked, typical 11-year-old stuff. I have to admit, I was smitten right off the bat. I think it was partly because I had never really had a boy like me before, and the other part being that my self-esteem was so low that I never thought a boy would be capable of liking me. Also, it could have been because Mark was one of the most popular boys in school at the time. He played football, was mouthy to the teachers, and was extremely outgoing. All the things a young girl would be attracted to. He talked for months, my puppy love growing for him more and more every time we chatted. Of course, I never spoke to him on the phone, nor did I get his phone number because why would you do that, right? All the while I was speaking to him, Tanya would be gassing me up, telling me how proud she was of me and that I deserved a boyfriend. My suspicions of Mark only began to grow when I attempted to approach him during school hours. Again, I had anxiety, so I'd never really speak to Mark outside of AIM. When I went to talk to him, Mark looked confused, as if though he's never had a conversation with me before in his life. He turned away from me on the playground and walked to be with his other friends. Huh, weird. This wasn't like him. He was usually so chatty with me online that I expected him to welcome me with open arms in person. My ego was bruised. My little 11-year-old mind tried to rationalize his behavior by chalking it up to him not wanting to talk to the nerd since he was so popular and that he just preferred to keep our relationship online. I told Tanya the news, and she seemed to be genuinely heartbroken for me. She was just as angry as I was and vowed to confront Mark later that day during music class. I was happy. Tanya had my back, and as far as I knew, she was going to tell Mark off about being a total jerk to me. Well, it worked. Later that night, I got a message from Mark telling me how sorry he was for ignoring me and that he was just going through some family things. Back in love, I was. I didn't care that Mark ignored me during school. I didn't care that he rejected my advances in person as long as I had him to talk to online and Tanya's support. I was fine. I even told my mom about him, and she was extremely happy for me as well. Another month passed, and it was March 31st, 2011. Mark messaged me and told me that he had something very important to tell me the next day. The anxiety began. What was it? What did he have to tell me? At that point, I considered myself and Mark to be dating, so I was anxious that he was either going to break it off with me or that he was going to make us public in school the next day. I told my mom and Tanya, almost on the verge of tears, of how excited and nervous I was. Well, the next day, April 1st, 2011, rolled around, and this is what followed. It was around 7 p.m., and I was on Club Penguin, as I usually was, until I heard a familiar ding. It was Mark. It was time for the news I've been waiting for all day. "Hey, babe." Winky face. "Oh my God, hey, I've been waiting for you to chat with me all night." "Sorry, babe, I was at practice. Are you ready for the news?" I was shaking with anticipation at this point. Even writing this now, a whole swell of emotions was resurfacing. "Yes, of course," I said. It was then that Mark sent me a picture. I opened it, but only it wasn't Mark. It was Tanya. And she was holding a handwritten sign that said, "Happy April Fool's Day." At first, I started laughing, and I mean it was an ugly laugh. Of course, it was a prank. Tanya had gotten me so good, right? Right? Well, wrong. It was then when the realization hit me that I started to sob. I felt betrayed and like a loser. Tanya had been behind Mark all along, and she had been planning this big joke since October of 2010. She had been so jealous that she pretended to be someone else and string along my emotions when she knew I was already in a rough place mentally. She told me that I was stupid to even think that Mark would even like me in the first place, and that I was dumb for not asking for his number. Tanya had been at this for 6 months. An 11-year-old girl plotted Mark, used him to make me think that a boy liked me, and tricked me into believing that I had a boyfriend, all the while telling me when we hung out that she was happy for me and that Mark and I were a cute couple. I told my mom, who then called her mom. My mother was livid, to say the least. She told Tanya's mom to tell her daughter never to speak to me again. I was crushed. My best friend of 3 years had catfished me because she simply wanted to play a joke. I was loyal to her, and she toyed with my emotions because she could. Tanya had tried multiple times to guilt-trip me into being her friend again in the months that followed leading into 7th grade. One of the more memorable and honestly messed up times being when she messaged me a few days after my birthday in August to tell me that her mother had just died in a horrible car crash. Her body was dismembered, and they could only find her head and wedding ring. As anyone would be, I was in tears. Tanya's mother was nothing but lovely to me, and learning that she died in such a violent way was crushing to my soul. I started talking to Tanya again, asking her mother's funeral would be. Tanya then revealed to me seconds later after speaking to her about the grisly details over her mother's passing that she was kidding and was pranking me again and that I was stupid to believe her. She even sent a video of her laughing at me. I was disgusted. Who would even say something like that? What now 12-year-old would message someone that their mother was dismembered in a car crash? She then revealed her ugly and quite frankly evil intentions when we were at the beginning of 7th grade and she became friends with a girl named Kaylee. They both invited me to sit with them at their lunch table, and because I was desperate for friends, I stupidly accepted, only to be met with hordes of insults and laughter behind my back every chance I wasn't looking. Tanya then messaged me one night telling me to take my own life and that the world would be a much better place without me in it. She had Kaylee tell me to go jump off of a bridge. Tanya told me that she hated me and was never really my friend to begin with, that I deserved all the pain she put me through the year prior. I again told my mom, who then called the police. She had had enough of Tanya, and so had I. For 4 years, I had put up with Tanya's malicious behavior, and I just couldn't handle it anymore. My mom made me delete my AIM account, and Tanya's mom told her to never contact me again, or else. My mom also advised me to move lunch tables, but I was focused on not letting Tanya win. For the entirety of 7th grade, I sat at the same table as Tanya, only I spoke to my friends at the other side of the table. I never spoke to her, looked at her, or gave her any sort of attention. Kaylee was scared to death of me afterward, too, as the police had gotten in contact with her and her family as well. It's been 10 years and I still haven't spoken to Tanya. I'm now 22 years old, have 2 bachelor's degrees, one in psychology and the other in history, and I'm now working towards a master's in clinical social work. Tanya did other things to me, too, that I could write a whole other story about, but I think writing this one helped me give closure on that part of my childhood that scarred me for years. I thank God for my mom stepping in when she did, because I don't know where I'd be without her. As for Tanya, I don't know where she is or what she's doing, and I really rather not. On the off chance she stumbles upon this story, I have a message for her. Your jealousy and wishes for death upon me didn't win, and I truly hope that karma does not come around one day to bite you where the sun don't shine. This story started years ago when I was 5. I'm a 27-year-old female now. I live with my parents and my sister at the time. The average working-class family, nothing out of the ordinary. Happy times. We moved to a different house in the same town, but I was sent to a new school because this one was way closer now. It is curious that I have these times pretty blurred out in memory because I was very young, but there are some days that I see as clear as water. This is one of them. My first day of this new school, I was very nervous. I wasn't the most extroverted or talkative kid. I was extremely shy and insecure, and still am to this day. Once a very sweet and loving woman came and explained that she was my new teacher, but now it was English time and she took me to this class. There they were, my new schoolmates and my new English teacher. We'll call him LC. A man in his 30s, short, fat, with a big black mustache. If you got closer, you saw like food debris and saliva in it. It was disgusting, to be honest. We all then agreed that he was kind of a Super Mario look-alike. He welcomed me and introduced me to the kids. I said hi and sat with them on the floor. Many of them introduced themselves, made some jokes. They seemed very nice and easygoing, and I was somehow relieved. I felt integrated immediately. LC proceeded, and he told me to stand up and go in front of the class to practice the basics. My name is, I am from, I'm 5 years old, etc. I said it once. It makes me say it again, a bit louder. I say it twice. He tells me to repeat, insisting I must speak louder. I say it for the third time, and it seems like it was never enough. His tone began to sound angry, and he goes again like, again, again. He had me repeating this like 6 times until I started crying, and he finally told me to sit down. My mates told me it was okay and that he was just a jerk. My mom later asked me about my day at school, and I said everything was fine except for the teacher, LC. I started crying and told her I didn't want to go to his class ever again. There was something about him, something dark. I didn't know what it was, but I felt it, and he scared the life out of me. Always trust your gut. For the following weeks, I kept whining to my mom the mornings I had English, but what could she do? She tried to calm me down, saying it was okay to have fun with my new friends and that he was just a grumpy teacher. I went to that school for 4 more years. I got used to him and his peculiar character. For example, he got really angry when a kid was late to his class. He yelled and told them to wait outside, sitting on the floor by the door, thinking. We were actually scared to be late. But there were also days when he was nice and fun. Time passed. Nothing out of the ordinary except for one thing. He talked a lot about the FBI. We'd be with computers in class, visiting the FBI website, reading about the most wanted criminals and stuff. Not the average English lesson for 9-year-old kids. He took pictures of us, saying that they were for the design of our own personalized FBI identification, a kind of game, I suppose. But it never happened. But we didn't think anything weird about it. Around Christmas time, he had taken a picture of the class to design a postcard. Years later, I was in high school, and an old classmate from that school tells me, "Hey, did you see the news? LC was found dead." I looked for it online, and I couldn't believe what I was reading. Police had found that LC had large amounts of images of children on his computer. In fact, the amount of lewd material found on his computers and hard drives was so vast that it made him one of the biggest ones in the entire country. When LC knew police were after him, he took his own life, jumping into the sea near the town's port, and drowned. I then remember that day when he didn't stop until I cried. I remember he scared me so much I didn't want to go to school. His FBI obsession, our photos. Everything made sense. That darkness I felt around him. I knew I should have trusted my gut. So back in the start of the year 2020, everything was as good as I hoped it would be. Well, that's what I thought until one Sunday night. So I'll give you a little backstory which will be important later in the story. My dad had had a bad history with messing around in other people's relationships. Of course, I'm not happy about it, but anyways, a lot of men had gotten so angry at him that we started to have multiple men do such things, such as mess around with our cat houses, break lights, and other things which I can't explain, sadly. So on that Sunday night, it was 10 p.m., which means my sister's boyfriend has to leave due to curfew rules and so on. I can't remember clearly, but it was all chill and quiet and normal. At least that's what I thought. Keep in mind that my parents were not home except for me and my sister. It was time to feed our cats because we were going to lock all the doors to go inside. Then my sister whispers loudly to me to go to our back door, which led to our garage. Then we heard a low voice mumbling something as if he were trying to keep quiet. Then this unknown house intruder let out a loud sneeze, and that's when we knew that there was someone in our home. So me and my sister ran into her room and locked the doors to keep safe. She tried many times to call my parents and relatives that lived nearby, and nobody answered. And that's when I suggested her boyfriend. Luckily, he picked up, and she told him the situation, so he quickly drove back. As he arrives and checked the garage and house, nobody was there, of course. I don't know what would have happened if nobody picked up the phone, but I'm happy we didn't.
So this weekend, my girlfriend and I went to a museum. As we were walking from the parking garage to the museum, this random dude starts walking out on his phone. He quickly got off his phone and walked behind me and tried to look casual as he turned around and took a picture. We looked around and saw that no one was on the street besides us. The only other people were a family of four and two small kids. I thought maybe he was trying to take a picture of them and was even more suspicious of that. After he did his little spin move photography, he went to sit down on a bench and watched us walk in. Now my girl was freaking out about it, and I was thinking nothing of it. Maybe he was just a weirdo. If anything, maybe it was pictures of the kids, or maybe some creepy weird pictures of her because she was in a cute dress. But now, 3 days later, I'm at work, and I'm a cashier at a store. I was standing at the front of my line looking for customers ready to pay, and I see a man walking by me. He's holding his camera almost directly pointed at me at an awkward angle. I'm thinking, no way he's taking a picture of me. But as he passes me, I get a look at his phone and could tell that he was using his camera. I've been trying to rationalize and rack my brain that maybe he was taking photos of something else in the store. But the angle he came from doesn't really have anything interesting or any barcodes he would need a picture of. Why could this be happening, and why to me? Did I do something that would warrant someone taking pictures of me? If they had pictures of me, what would they even do with them? I'm just nervous and don't know who to tell, and how to feel about this. Is it all in my head? This just happened today. I'm a mom of two, and am currently taking online classes. My husband works nights, so any errands I need to run during the day, my boys come with me. Today's errands included me running to my school's library for some books. My school has multiple locations, and the closest one to me, unfortunately, is located in the sketchiest area. I figured it would be fine, since it's a college campus. I pull up, load my boys into the stroller, and headed inside. As soon as I went in, I noticed the first floor was mostly a resource type of area, and didn't see an elevator to the other floors, and going up the stairs with a stroller is a nearly impossible task. I didn't want to give up, so I started strolling to see if there's anything I could use. I immediately noticed a woman at the information desk looking around, if not right at me. It weirded me out a bit because there were maybe a total of 3 other people, aside from the very few workers. This woman appeared to be in her late 30s, while I was in my mid-20s with 2 young children. I browsed the aisle, and then this woman moved to an information desk that was closer to me. I decided to ask for help, so I make my way to the same desk to wait my turn. This woman turns and just stares at me for a good solid 5 seconds. I was waiting for a smile or awkward small talk, but that never came. Her phone camera was also being pointed at me, so I started browsing again because I was uncomfortable. She kept looking at me, and her phone was following me. I went to hide behind some bookshelves for a bit, and then made my way to the middle of the library. The woman's finished at her desk, turns right towards me with her phone pointed at me, and is walking straight towards me, staring daggers. I'm extremely freaked out and confused. She walked right by and made her way to an elevator, which was nowhere near me. I'm not confrontational at all, which I know I need to work on, but I built up the courage to talk to the same librarian she had. I told him that I thought she was staring at me, maybe recording me, and that it made me feel uncomfortable. They told me that they couldn't see because the monitor was so big, but also, she was just looking up stuff on her phone, totally brushing it off. I ended up leaving, and constantly checking over my shoulder. I know this isn't super terrifying, but for someone with anxiety, it is pretty scary, also having my 2 young kids with me. I would love to hear if anyone has ideas of what was going on. I heard her asking for some religious book. Also, this town itself is known for drugs. I can't imagine someone actively seeking a young mom or kids would be at a college campus library on a Wednesday morning.
All right, y'all, that is my time. I hope everybody enjoyed the show. Make sure to tune in tomorrow, same place. Y'all know what the vibe is. Before I get here, I just want to say make sure y'all follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and right here on Blog Talk Radio under Raven's Real Spill. And I also have a podcast that I've had for a while. And drop a vote in this room. It's called Raven's Rant, and it is on Twitter. But I know everybody that's listening, if you listen to the playback, thank you. I appreciate y'all. Before I get out of here, I'm going to leave y'all with the thought of the day, night, or whatever your time is. And that is, don't pretend to know what it is that a person wants. If you don't know, ask the question, because at the end of the day, it's better to know and want to learn what is bids not any questions at all and be in the darkness of ignorance. So with that being said, love, peace, and blessings. Pray before you last. I love y'all.